Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Whew. I made it. Barely. I thought I had things timed a little better. I did. And no, I can't answer the phone right now. But there was a train. There was a train coming. First of all, I had to go by and get my refreshment like I usually do. But I took all the back ways. I had plenty of time. And then the person coming out of the parking lot, and you know where I'm talking about? Just down the road. Wanted to turn left.
No chance.
I had plenty of time.
Still had plenty of time.
By the time that car was able to turn left and I started finally get out to cross the railroad tracks, there was a train. But I made it. We're here in the studio, Bill and Dan. Hope everybody doing well on another summery afternoon.
I mean, we're running out of shows before the first game here, Bill.
No, you're absolutely right.
I mean, we're rapidly losing opportunities to preview Auburn's first game because we're going to be there. I mean, this is what we are. We're going to be doing 13, 14 more shows, depending on how you want to count it, before we go see an Auburn football game.
Yeah, I mean,
we're coming up on.
That's right.
I mean, nobody understands
13
that.
13 shows after today.
Nobody understands that better than our next guest, I bet, who, you know, has also been preparing for a long time.
Well, we know. I mean, he's always prepared. I've never asked him, but I would assume he was a scout because he's always prepared. And that is our good friend, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, who's joining us on the Drive Hotline today. Andy, how you doing?
Guys, I'm doing well. And let me answer this. I was not a Boy Scout.
Oh, my
goodness. My youngest brother was an Eagle Scout, but I was not a Boy Scout.
If you're going to be a Boy Scout, then absolutely.
I think I got...
Take it to the top.
I got all the way to, like, the early Boy Scout level. I did the Cubs and the Weeblos and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think once I saw how time-intensive being serious about your scouting was as a Boy Scout, I'm the brother of an Eagle Scout. The son, my dad, a couple of his brothers did it too. I mean, Eagle Scout is quite an accomplishment. I understand why folks who get to that level are proud of it. And you know what I do remember from that is be prepared.
Yes.
Yep.
And Andy, I'm sure you've that mantra has come in handy. And I bet you've been getting prepared for this upcoming season.
As much as I can. I'm waiting for the two deep on Alabama A&M. That's really what I need right now, is to be able to start doing some pretty intensive work on that first opponent that Auburn has. I'll get Cal stuff as quick as I possibly can, but I'm waiting on Alabama A&M intel right now. That may be tough to come by, I'm afraid, but out like you guys and saw the scrimmage this past Saturday and moved a couple guys around, changed a couple numbers
mm-hmm.
on our boards as well. So it was good to see the Tigers out. I don't think we saw a ton from Auburn offensively in the scrimmage, but like you guys, I'm sure, was pleased with what we saw from a defensive standpoint this past Saturday.
Oh, there's no question about that. And I was going to say that, yeah, I moved a few players around, but it is much more stable, and I feel much better, and I'm sure you do, as you get ready for the season, as to having an idea of the names that you're going to be calling. I mean, the starting lineup is pretty close, if not set. And boy, it's exciting to see the depth, I think, that we're going to see this year from the Auburn team.
I think it's pretty set from an offensive standpoint. I don't know exactly what we'll see from a rotation standpoint, Bill, especially at that interior defensive
right.
line.
But you're going to see a lot of guys playing a lot of time.
Yeah, we're going to see Rakes and Bleedy and Keys and Jason Jones, Malik Blockton, guys like that. I think we're going to see that. I think I liked what I saw from Kieron Crawford, what he continues to do at that buck spot for the Tigers as well. So, you know, listen, I mean, I know that the season is fast approaching and it's going by quickly, but, you know, there's still some time to set those rotations and see some guys in that defensive backfield. But I feel pretty certain at least the frontline guys offensively right now, unless something drastic happens in the next couple of weeks, I kind of think we saw, you know, we saw those guys on Saturday. Now, listen, who exactly starts in the slot and at the wide receiver spots? I mean, that's, you know, we know that Auburn has depth at the receiver spot right now. It has depth at tight end. It has depth in the backfield, for goodness sakes. I mean, if there is a question mark offensively right now, it's not necessarily the guys up front. It's who's the number two quarterback. Hmm. Is it Holden Gerner at the backup spot? Or you know, is it Hank Brown at this point? We saw Walker White a little bit on Saturday. So, you know, still some question marks, still some things to be answered before Auburn gets ready for that opener on the 31st.
And Andy, a question mark I have offensively. I absolutely agree. You know, the competition behind Peyton Thorne between, and I think it's narrowed down to Hank and Holden. Nothing against Walker, but it sounds like it's more focused on Hank versus Holden to be the next guy up after Peyton is one of the intense competition. You know, a question mark I have offensively is, and it was something somebody asked me after the practice on Saturday, how improved are you talking about with the Auburn offensive line? Because that's a group that, I mean, they've had a pretty good idea all offseason who the starters are going to be. There were times last year when the line excelled. There were times last year when the production was more uneven. But Jake Thornton seems to have a pretty, you know, he seems to exude confidence about the group he has, including Connor Liu coming back for, you know, having a full off season as the center. What's your sense talking to people around the team about that group?
I think they feel more settled up front than they did a year ago. I think there still may be some movement at the second spot, especially the two guard spots. Mm-hmm. You know, who's the backup guards right now for Auburn? How much will those guys rotate in? I mean, I don't think it's going to be that first five out there for every offensive play. I think they may get a little bit of time off in these first couple ball games. I do feel like that the first five, you know, Lewis and Wade and Lou and Wright and Miller, I think that's the first five guys out there right now. Last week we had a chance, I'm sure you did as well, a chance to talk to Connor Liu. And, you know, I mean, this guy is a true sophomore who started what the back third of Auburn's season last year, but as a true sophomore now is one of the veterans. Dan, I heard you talking with Justin in the podcast the other day, the Observer podcast. You know, a lot of these guys, and I think we're going to probably say this about the likes of Cam, you know, Cam Coleman and Perry Thompson and Malcolm Simmons and Bryce Kane. Yeah, these guys are true freshmen right now. And a couple of these guys haven't been on campus or have been on campus just since June, but I think they're going to get a ton of playing time. I think halfway through the season, in name they will be freshmen, but they're going to be, you know, as the season goes on, they're going to be looked to as veterans.
Well, there's
like a Connor Liu was a year ago for Auburn, and he is absolutely one of the veterans for Auburn as a true sophomore right now.
There seem to be a couple of positions where you know, especially when you look at the second guys up, the next guys up, they're relatively inexperienced, right? Defensive back stands out, you know, with what they have. Whoever would go in the event of a Keontae or Kayan Lee or Champ Anthony injury, I suppose offensive line is another position kind of like that, where they could have youth. I guess they could have some youth, you know, on the next level. Well, yeah, I mean,
you've got Tyler Johnston and Braden Joyner has really stepped it up. Those are a couple of second-year guys right there that appear to be on the second group right now.
Feels important to get those guys playing time, as Andy just suggested. You know, feels important to get those guys playing time early in the schedule so that their first snaps aren't in the teeth of a conference game in the fourth quarter.
Well, and let's add Tate Johnson to that list, and that's a guy that's played at, I think, both guard spots and certainly at the center.
Mm-hmm.
We saw him in the backup center spot for Auburn. That is a veteran. I mean, he doesn't have a ton of starting playing time for Auburn, but he's one of those veteran guys that can play a number of spots, and he was playing behind Connor Liu and got a lot of reps in the scrimmage on Saturday. But that's a guy I feel very comfortable. That if Auburn has to go to someone else at guard or someone else at center, I think Tate Johnson's a guy, and we've seen Auburn go to him before. So there is some depth. There are some veterans in the depth, and there are some guys that we have not seen yet. I think there is talent there, but beyond that first five, there's some guys that are going to have to probably play some snaps for Auburn to get those reps. And perhaps if Auburn can stay away from injuries, and that's a big if.
Right.
And Bill, you've asked Coach Freeze about this. I asked Coach Freeze about this last Friday night at the Tigers Unlimited dinner, over 1,700 at the dinner the other night in the old indoor facility. And I think it's one that he still wrestles with the right balance of contact in practice and still giving guys – he doesn't want to get guys hurt in practice. And I'm not – there are times where there's nothing you can do about it in a game. But you can limit the amount of contact in a practice. And I know I can hear some of the old school folks going, well, heck, they certainly hit when I was – whenever. I understand that. But I do get the sense from Coach Freeze, and he's very transparent with us, that is a balance that he is trying to find. The amount of contact needed, and yet he doesn't want to overdo it and get somebody injured in a practice.
None. And you look around the league and you see two or three teams that have already lost key players, and you understand.
For the year.
Yes. You understand why that is, sure. Why that is so important. So, I that's one of the things I thought people were a little disappointed in the offense, but there were some defensive players wanting to go ahead and be able to tackle to the ground, but there were surely a lot of offensive players that didn't like a touch or a thud being a complete tackle.
Well, I mean, I got the idea Saturday that there were a couple periods where there was full contact.
Yep.
And probably more where it was just thud. It was just contact and you're done. And that was always the case with the quarterbacks. And I think that takes away with what perhaps Peyton can do, or Hank, or Holden, or even Walker, to a certain degree. I think that's certainly the case with the guys in the backfield, with Jarquez or Damari or Jeremiah at this point, or even Justin Jones, who got some work, and also Sam, Sean Jackson, who got some work in that backfield. So I'll be interested. I don't know if we'll get, a report out of the scrimmage this week. But I thought, there were a couple guys I thought offensively that really stood out. Malcolm Simmons was certainly one of those guys for Auburn. But I thought defense kind of ruled the day in the scrimmage this past Saturday. And listen, it regardless of any scrimmage at this year, somebody's going to be happy, somebody isn't going to be happy on your ball club. And then Saturday, I think, we get to talk to defensive coaches tomorrow.
Right.
So we'll get the final report, that film report from DJ Durkin and his crew about just how well they did execute on Saturday. But, if Peyton had gone out and just thrown the ball all over the field and all the offense would have run all over the defense, we'd be a little bit concerned about the defense at this point. So it's just kind of the way it is, when you get to the scrimmage part before you open up the season.
Talking with Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, here as we get things underway on the Tuesday drive. We will get to our first break of the afternoon. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
looking for a part-time position.
106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 19 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. You can text us on The Drive text box right now because we have Andy on The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
That's right, 334-564-1840 on The Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast available however you listen to podcasts.
Andy, we've got... As we said, just less than 3 weeks until kickoff, but you've got quite a few things going on with the Talking Tigers getting ready for the first Tiger Talk, which is just a week from this coming Monday.
That's right, the 19th. We will start Tiger Talk. We're going to do a private event on the Auburn campus. Our first guests will be Hugh Freeze, along with Auburn men's golf coach Nick Kleinert and Auburn basketball coach Bruce Pearl. That's Friday night, the 19th, or excuse me, Monday night. Sorry about that. I knew the dog was going to start barking at some point.
Well, the dog was just correcting you, that's all.
That's right. Monday night, the 19th, at 6 o'clock. And just for that matter, Tiger Talks during football season are going to be on Monday, so it'll be a little bit of a different dynamic. We'll probably be looking back a little bit more on the past game. Of course, Coach Freeze will have had his press conference that day as well. Mm-hmm. So Monday's going to be a very busy day. And then for that Monday leading into that first home football game, we'll be back at Baumhauer's Victory Grill. So we're looking forward to that. It's still a time for me to get out. I was in Nashville, Tennessee last night for the Greater Nashville Auburn Club event. They had a great crowd at the Loveless Cafe Event Center there in Nashville. I'm speaking to the Athletic Directors Club at Chappies later on this week. I'll be in Chilton County next week, I think next Tuesday. So we'll probably be on the phone again next Tuesday to speak. And then that's my last speaking engagement until October, outside of just everything leading into game week. So, yeah, it's a busy time this week on the Talking Tigers, Bill. It's Auburn soccer as the Tigers open the season against Clemson. This week, Christina Wakefield, who's Auburn's newest assistant coach. And then, on the other hand, the longest-running head coach on the Auburn campus, Karen Hoff, in her 26th season.
Wow, that's
And then the next 2 weeks after this, we're looking back at the 2004 season. He was a sophomore defensive back at the time, Will Herring. And then in a couple weeks, our conversation with our friend Don Dunn, talking about that 2004 season as we get ready to. And it's hard. I mean, I've already done interviews with Don, Will, and Jason Campbell, hoping to get Ronnie Brown on the podcast as well for this. But every one of those guys, to a man, including myself, it's hard to believe it's been 2 decades.
Yeah, no kidding.
Since that undefeated SEC championship team, there's a lot of memories, and I mentioned in Jason's podcast that's one of my all-time favorite teams at Auburn in any sport. I loved the culture of that team, how balanced that team was offensively and defensively. Had a ton of veterans on that squad. And in spite of the disappointment of that team not getting a chance to play for the national championship, the fact that there is a 12-team playoff this year, I think is greatly due in great measure to that 2004 Auburn Tiger SEC championship.
Oh, there is no question about that. Yeah. The fact that there were, you know, more undefeated teams than there were spots available. That's not going to happen anymore. That's exactly right. And you know, Tiger Talk going to Mondays, that's a blast from the past. That's a throwback. That's I remember Coach Dye having Monday night dialing Dye.
Yeah, so I look forward to that. I'm very much looking forward to the Monday nights with Coach Freeze. We'll have other coaches on, hopefully, and we've done this in the past, hopefully some of the football players will be joining us every week that we're on location as well. That's always fun to have those guys out and about and, you know, being able to take pictures and answer questions of our crowds that We've always had a really good crowd at Baumhauer's Victory Grill, so really looking forward to starting it, and it all starts this coming Monday night at 6.
Yeah, you know, getting back to the 04 season just a little bit more, it is wild to think, like, how vivid some of those memories are for people. I mean, you got the sense that something historic was happening. I think back to, like, the LSU game, Andy, the Tennessee game up in Knoxville has become sort of mythical in its status, I was telling a story recently that the Iron Bowl in Tuscaloosa that year was, I mean, it was one of the times I can remember anxiety from a football game causing me physical discomfort, like genuine symptoms.
Well, it's rare. It's rare when you have when you're going to be facing Alabama and feel like you ought to win, and it's not at Jordan-Hare. I mean, there was so much pressure. It felt like to go ahead and take care of business there.
Well, and that was also, I mean, 20 years ago, you played Georgia at home and you still had Alabama on the road. So that,
right.
You know, you didn't face both of them either at home or on the road in the same season. Well, here, a couple things I remember about that season. I remember the Mississippi State game was Auburn's first SEC game. It was also Auburn's first road game. And there were still a lot of question marks to me for Auburn going into that game and how well Auburn dominated a Mississippi State game. And those games in Starkville had always been just slugfests, and Auburn dominated that game. The one home game, other than the LSU game, and the one home game, though, that stands out to me that year, guys, is Georgia. And that at that time, of course, Rod was in the radio booth with Stan, and I was doing mostly all the home games on tape delay with Cole Kublin.
Right.
And I can remember I was living on the south side of Auburn at that point, and it would take me 8 to 10 minutes to get to campus, even on a game day. That Georgia day, which was Auburn's biggest home game, because remember that was, if Auburn was going to make a move into the top two that season, it was going to be the Georgia game that was going to do it. And in talking with a lot of folks after that game, their memories are, yeah, I think we've done enough to get into the top two, and of course, it never happened. But that day, typically a 10-minute drive to campus, and I was there 5-6 hours beforehand because I was doing some other duties as well. It took 35 minutes to get to campus. Game day was on campus that day. I mean, it was an enormous atmosphere. And Auburn dominated and could have dominated even more. A really good Georgia team. That to me, I mean, LSU was so, I mean, you think back to that LSU game, and there's one drive for Auburn and that fourth down pass with the game on the line for the Tigers. And then, of course, the third down pass in the end zone for Jason, the game winner. The missed extra point and getting another chance because of the penalty, and you end up winning it by one. But, boy, that Georgia game's what stands out, just because of the atmosphere that was on campus for that one.
Met Scott Van Pelt at the game day before the Georgia game in 04. He was in town enjoying Auburn festivities, and I think it was his first Auburn game ever. And he's referenced that atmosphere before as
I'm trying to remember. Did he still have hair then?
I think it was. I think he was going shaved head for like the stylish look back. I think it was sort of a fashion choice. And then with LSU, Andy, you know, I would agree with all the plays you mentioned, but the one that stands out to me is Cadillac Williams yanking the pick six.
Out of the hands
of the defensive back. And saving the game, because if that LSU player gets one step further the other way, he's probably running an errant Jason Campbell pass to the house, and it's a very different football game and a very different season for Auburn if that all happens. And it's
think about the quarterback sack by Brett Eddins,
yes,
in that game. And in talking with Brett about that, he said the first thing he thought about after the sack was getting off the field as fast as he could before he celebrated and got a penalty in that. And then, of course, Junior Rosegreen had the pick that iced the game for the Tigers. And Jason mentioned in the podcast, in the Talking Tigers podcast, it's the most physical football game he's ever played in at any level. and you think back to that 04 game, and you've got, you know, Tommy Tuberville and Gene Chizik on one sideline, and on the other sideline is Nick Saban as the defending national champion LSU and Will Muschamp on his staff. And, I mean, those two teams were loaded with NFL talent.
Oh, yeah.
That day. Offensively, but certainly defensively. And just a classic slugfest that day at Jordan-Hare Stadium. And I remember Jan met me on the field after I did the postgame locker room, the jubilant postgame locker room. And we walked out of the stadium that day and the sunshine was streaming in. And just that feeling of what a huge win that was for Auburn. And little did we know that it would help lead Auburn to that undefeated season. And Auburn's first SEC championship, Bill, in a long, long time. I mean, listen, we got used to it in the 80s, mm-hmm. but there wasn't another championship for Auburn on the SEC side. Had a couple chances.
Right.
Probably should have won it in 97, but hadn't won a conference championship till that 04 season.
Yeah, how about that? It'd been right at 15 years. And I saw Brett's dad Saturday, and he'd tell you how much time has passed. They've got 8 grandchildren. It's either
wow.
two. Brett's got either 2 or 3. Bart's got either 2 wow. or 3. I mean, they've got 8 grandkids though. So
yeah, 20 years, baby. That's hard to believe.
You know, and I'd start scouting some of them right now if I were
no kidding.
If I were an Auburn coach. I know you were highlighting the defensive coaches there. I would also point out. You had Jimbo Fisher on the sideline as LSU offensive coordinator that day, and you had a fellow named Kirby Smart as the defensive backs coach for LSU that day as well on that 04 LSU. I mean, there was some
pretty good staff,
some prominent names were
there. There was some pretty good talent on and off the field that day.
No question about it. Andy, it's always great when we have a little time to spend with you. I mean, we didn't even get into some other things. The construction over there at Plainsman Park is just phenomenal. May not be the easiest thing to get by and see, but, I mean, it's really impressive. And you can see some of the framework of things there in the north end zone where it's going to be more than just the new scoreboard. So there's so many different things going on.
Yeah.
And as you said, we've got competition with getting started this week. So, I mean, fall is here. Hey, by the time we speak again, classes will be underway on campus.
Well, my wife would have typically been with me in Nashville last night, but they've already begun for her at Columbus State.
Yep.
So, and of course, kids are in class here in Auburn and Opelika as well. So, be extra careful as you're driving into work. We all have noticed, I think, the increased traffic in and around Auburn and Opelika, that's for sure.
Yes, I have to leave a little earlier each day. So,
that's right.
Andy, you mentioned the things going on. Anything you want to hit again just to remind folks?
Well, just a reminder, the Talking Tigers podcast this week, we talk soccer with Karen Hoppe and Christina Wakefield from the soccer staff. This coming Monday, you'll hear from Will Herring, on the Talking Tigers podcast, talking about that 04 team. And, of course, we start everything from a network standpoint with Tiger Talk Monday night at 6, of course, on Wings and across the Auburn Sports Network. So it really begins in earnest for us this coming Monday night with our first edition of our broadcast schedule, and that's Tiger Talk at 6 o'clock.
Looking forward to it over on Wings 94.3. Andy, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again next week, wherever, on the road or here in the studio, most likely on the phone.
On the phone next Tuesday. I'll be heading to Chilton County, to Clanton for the Chilton County Auburn Club. So I'll join you by the hotline next week.
Sounds good. Take care, Andy.
And thanks for listening to The Observer, too. That was nice. You
mentioned
that in there. So appreciate that, Andy.
You bet. My pleasure, guys. Thank you. War Eagle!
Voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us here on the Tuesday Drive.
I was just telling somebody, it's so nice that, because like Andy Burcham is good enough as a broadcaster that, I mean, it's a bonus that he's also really cool and fun to talk to, right?
Like, I'm not saying, no kidding.
I mean, I'm not saying like not say that anybody is like unpleasant in the industry or anything like that. But you hear,
but
like,
there are plenty of people.
Andy Burcham is talented enough that he would, if anybody's earned the right to be unpleasant because they're so talented, it's Andy. And in fact, he's delightful to talk to and super nice and supportive and what have you. So thanks for that, Andy.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Going to open up our phone lines. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390. Might as well go ahead and throw in the text box again.
Yeah, since we got time with the music playing.
Yeah.
Our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors, who also sponsor the podcast,
right?
They sponsor the text box, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box. That's how you can reach us over the phone.
Yes, come on in and join us. Here on the Tuesday Drive.
Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Our thanks to the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us in the first couple of segments. And I hope you had a chance to hear that. If you missed any of it, you can check out the podcasts, which are, as Dan said, sponsored by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. It has been it's been a fun preseason thus far for us in the media, because we've had plenty of opportunities to watch some practice, talk to players. We've talked to Auburn offensive coaches. Tomorrow we'll get the defensive coaches. We have another viewing window coming up, and then we have another opportunity to, well, actually, I guess Friday it'll be Hugh Freeze, viewing window, and then players after practice. So, I mean, we've got a lot of audio that we can run for you with coaches and players, and we can give you our observations if you have any questions about what we have seen thus far.
Yeah, I mean, I think the rest of the week, it's still it does feel like a lot of the starting positions have at least they've most of the competitions to be in the starting lineup are over until opening day, barring an injury.
Right. That's the only thing I think that could really shake things up.
I would say the exceptions to that are you could still see some movement as to who's the first three at wide receiver, I think, Bill. I think there's still some. I mean, especially if Lambert Smith is healthy, right? I think between Lambert Smith, Robert Lewis, Cam Coleman, Sam Jackson, Malcolm Simmons, Perry Thompson, You have six or seven guys vying for three starting jobs at receiver, even going into the opener. I expect to see all of those guys if they're available. But who the first three are, that's up for some discussion. And I think the next couple of practices could play a role in deciding. Yeah, who are those first three? Who are those first three receivers going to be? You know, in the event, and
you know, we've talked about it at receiver, and they're on the defensive line. I don't think it's not critical. It's always neat to have your name up on the see your face up on the screen and hear your name introduced as a starter. But you're going to see quite a few players at both receiver and on the defensive line.
My assumption would be, though, to bring back a term we decided to start using yesterday, Bill, my assumption would be that if you're a starter, if your name's, you know, if you're first on the call sheet, that means you're on the A-team. And if it's a crunch time situation, if it's a gotta-have-it situation, now maybe that depends on...
Yeah, maybe it may depend on situation.
Could be game flow, right? Could be who's played well over the course of the game that decides that rather than... But I would think the plan going in would be whoever those starters are, that's who you want on the field in crunch time at the end, at least going into the game.
Probably. I mean, it is sort of unfair that you can only have one starter at like nose and a defensive tackle or something like that when just depending on, as you said, depending on how the game's going or the matchup or the situation down in distance, time in the ball game, it could call for someone other than the starter. But I think that's a great situation to have. Auburn said, hey, we've seen it over the last few years that there wasn't anybody behind that starter, and it wasn't necessarily that you had all the confidence in the world in the starter. That's just the best you have.
You know, somebody asked me, speaking of the questions about getting back to a point we were talking about with Andy, about deciding how to distribute reps when you've got some older players that you feel pretty good about who you don't want to get injured, and you've got younger players that need a baptism by fire in college football because they're going to be an important part of your team this year. Like, that's Auburn's situation at defensive back. It's sort of reminiscent of Auburn's situation at quarterback, right? Except that I think that the reps for Thorne are super valuable too. And it's, you know, I understand the desire to get Thorne out of there when the game's comfortable,
right,
or close to comfortable, and get Holden and Hank some more playing time because one of them is your backup quarterback. But I see the value in getting Peyton Thorne as many reps as possible with his new teammates, especially those wide receivers, and so that you feel like you can get to an advanced level pretty early on with an offense that has undergone some significant changes.
And Andy mentioned this, but Saturday scrimmage is extremely important, and we're not going to get an opportunity to see it. And that's very understandable.
That's a sign of how important it is.
It is. And
they're keeping the riffraff out.
I wonder if
giving us the 23 skidoo.
Well, I wonder if Hugh Freeze is gonna know or will let us know how much full contact there's gonna be on Saturday. That's the other thing he was talking about.
But I think there are spots where Hugh Freeze probably doesn't want too much full contact in practice, right? I mean, there's maybe when you get to the backups and the third stringers, Bill, but I would think there are some spots where maybe you want to keep some of your starters, but some of your more established guys on something like a pitch count going into the start of the season. You know, whether it's running back or linebacker or corner or quarterback. You know, these are spots where, you know, we asked Kieron Crawford yesterday, and that's a fun interview if we get the chance to run it too. But we're talking to Kieron yesterday, and he's real eager to start getting to hit some quarterbacks for real, Bill. He's been chasing around guys.
Yeah, you know that.
Getting a hand on it, and he's like, "He's
ready." Did you get him?
Yeah, I got about 7 minutes.
I really would like to hear.
You want to take a break? I can send it over, and we can.
Let's do that. Yeah. I want to hear from the one of the newer members there of the Auburn defensive front, and a guy that is I think really going to be a huge addition to Auburn's pass rush.
If we have a chance, I know we got Jake in the second hour too. I'd love to run the Peyton Thorne audio too. I got about 15 minutes with Peyton Thorne, me and a couple of the other writers yesterday.
Sure.
And he was outstanding. Breaks down not just what's different. I got the first question up to Peyton, Bill, and it was just, you know, what feels different about this year against, you know, versus last year, and his answer is, to boil it down, his answer is everything. But he goes into some detail there, and then tells us, you know, like Hugh Freeze did on Friday, gives us a breakdown of receivers and tight ends and how they're doing and what they each bring to the table and what to expect out of them. So yeah, we can run some Peyton Thorne. But yeah, I got about 6 minutes of Kieron Crawford from yesterday. He was a fun guy to talk to. Had a couple of interesting things to say about his story.
Sounds good. We will do that when we come back. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Hip pain is not.
This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this Tuesday. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls. And we had Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, on with us for the first couple of segments of hour number one. I hope you had a chance to hear that. If you missed any of that or any part of the show or any show, you can check out our podcasts.
That's right. Podcasts of The Drive, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They're an Alabama-based firm hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. You can call them up, 334-209-6355, to learn more. Love Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They sponsor the podcast and the Drive text box.
Yeah, go ahead and give them the text box number.
334-564-1840 if you want to join the show via the Drive text box.
You can also call us on the Drive hotline. That is sponsored by Skybar, and the number is 334-321-1390. And hour number two of the show brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations at Auburn and Opelika. Yes, I could say we have gone to the Orthopedic Clinic. Just my wife and I have gone for, let's see, knees, shoulders, and now wrist. So we've got all kinds of.
They are slowly Frankensteining the two of you.
Very high reviews. Yeah.
Excellent.
I'm not quite the $6 million man or anything, but.
That's right. Now they're building you back faster, stronger.
Just trying to keep everything from completely falling apart. No, great folks at the Orthopedic Clinic. You can find them online at orthoclinic.com.
Didn't mention that the AP poll came out earlier today.
Oh, that's right.
Preseason.
Was Auburn like 32 or something?
Auburn is also receiving votes in the AP poll as we. Yeah, I mean, Georgia, unsurprising that they're the number one team. I think most preseason rankings, you know, Georgia, Ohio State seem to be something of a – like, if there's a showdown that's not on the schedule that people are pointing at and saying this would be the, you know, the matchup this year in college football, it feels like Georgia, Ohio State, because those are your top two in mm-hmm. – and which is, you know, those are two teams that didn't make the playoff. Last year.
That is pretty wild.
And yet, it would seem like they are the consensus top two teams in the top two conferences.
They would have made a 12-team playoff. They would have been there a couple of the next out. They were just outside the picture last year.
I think they both would have been pretty tough outs in a playoff last year if they'd been able to make it into the playoff. But Georgia getting 46 of the 61 first place votes in the AP poll that was released, the preseason poll. Ohio State getting 15. And Bill, do you know the team that got the other number one vote other than Georgia and Ohio State?
I didn't notice who had the other first place vote.
Number three, Oregon is a team receiving a first place vote in the AP poll. Texas and Alabama 4 and 5. That's your preseason top five. Ole Miss 6. Bill, we had this conversation when we were talking about the preseason coaches poll. I wonder how many preseason top six seasons Ole Miss has had in the history of Ole Miss football in the AP poll. I wonder how many times Ole Miss has entered the season.
I don't.
You don't want to say never.
No, I don't recall. I was going to say I don't recall it happening to my memory. But then I don't know. You know what Johnny Vaught's teams were ranked back in the late 50s.
Yeah, you're going
so
back.
I don't know.
Yeah, but you're going back.
I don't think since then they have been.
How many times since Woodstock has it happened, Bill? I mean,
how many times since the British invasion has it happened?
How many times since Beatles on Ed Sullivan?
Really?
Has it happened? No, you're right. And you know, not very many. So it's a huge season. And that's where, you know, I keep thinking if Auburn caught a break on the schedule, it's the fact that you played LSU and Ole Miss every year, and this year you don't play them, and they both appear to be – I mean, this appears to be maybe the best Ole Miss team of the post-expansion era of the SEC, you know, getting back to when division play started 30-something years ago. And LSU, another top 15, you know, preseason ranking, which has become pretty customary for them. So Ole Miss 6, Notre Dame 7. You know, Notre Dame at 7, most places have them as the underdog in Kyle Field on opening night against Texas A&M, despite the fact that polls like Notre Dame as a preseason top 10
polls always like team. Notre Dame as a preseason top 10 team.
They tend to like A&M too.
There are an awful lot of people that have liked A&M over the last few years, and this year is no exception.
That's a big game early. That's going on week two.
That's
opening night. That's going on during the Auburn game on opening night. Notre Dame will be in Kyle Field for that is a massive preseason. That's a massive week one game for both of those teams. And yeah, right now, let me see if ESPN. I don't think ESPN Bet has odds on your first week. But yeah, places I've seen have it very close. But A&M as a very close favorite in a lot of
that'll get a lot of money on Notre Dame. That'll get a lot of money on
I think there's gonna be a lot of money on. You know, I think that's the kind of game that could get a lot of money gambled.
Period.
On it, no matter. Yes. Yeah. I mean, you get a close matchup like that opening day. LSU USC is it's a Sunday night game, I believe, and then you get an ACC game on Monday. So some SEC teams playing really big games. Opening the season, including A&M, who plays Notre Dame. Penn State 8, Michigan 9, Florida State 10. Missouri 11, Utah 12, LSU 13, Clemson 14, Tennessee 15. It's a big bet on Tennessee. I know they won 9 games last year with a new quarterback and some tough games early.
Right.
Want to see what they look like. Speaking of tough games early for Tennessee, Oklahoma 16, Kansas or Oklahoma State 17, Kansas State 18, Miami 19. Miami's got Florida to open the season, right? That one's in Gainesville?
Yep. Yes, it is.
Going to Gainesville. It's another big week one SEC game. A&M 20, Arizona, Kansas, USC, North Carolina State, and Iowa, the bottom five teams in your top 25 from the AP poll. Auburn received 2 votes, one of a couple of SEC teams. I believe, Kentucky also got a couple of votes in the preseason poll as well. Washington, not in the top 25, and I believe there were 5 or 6 teams got more votes than Washington, the national runner-up last year. Big turnover there for Washington between new head coach and a lot of
That says a little bit about what some voters think about Kalen DeBoer too.
To an extent, I think the fact that you only have 3 starters back from last year's team is
part of the reason is because DeBoer's gone too, because they would have had more starters back.
That's true. Although the guy who left Arizona for Washington left a team that's going to be, the team he left behind is number 21 in the preseason poll. So I mean, they seem to think
more of the talent. I guess it was left there than it is that he's going to take over.
Yeah, I want to see I want to see what Washington looks like in year one. For everyone's been focused on DeBoer, especially around here, understandably so. But I want to see what Fish can do. I think he's a very good coach. He was able to turn around an Arizona team that looked pretty lost a couple of years ago into a genuine contender.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And let's get to it. And John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey guys, it's funny. I was on hold, and y'all brought up the topic I wanted to talk about. I heard an interview with Jed Fish, the new coach, the new coach at Washington. That is a fascinating case study of what that program is doing this year. And so, if you're unfamiliar, Jed Fish was an analyst at a bunch of NFL programs. And he's brought in a lot of sons of NFL head coaches to be assistants on that staff. Bill Belichick's son is on that staff. Pete Carroll's son is on that staff. Jack Del Rio's son is on that staff.
Wow, I didn't realize.
And the way he sees college football going is a lot of the NFL talent evaluation with revenue sharing coming down the road. And I find it a fascinating case study. And I know they don't return a lot of starters. I'm really interested to see what they do in the Big Ten this year.
No, I agree. I mean, there's more attention on the California schools and Oregon because Oregon's a preseason top 5 team. But, there's also your national runner-up from last year. It's a whole new staff, pretty much a completely turned-over roster. But you're right. I believe Belichick's the DC, Carroll the OC. And they both worked in football in different levels, but it's a I was really impressed with what Fish was able to do at Arizona. Like, it's not an easy place to win. It's a school that, especially when the basketball program is doing well, the football program tends to get a little bit lost in the shuffle. And they were beating teams that usually have more resources and certainly had more recent success last year with Fish.
And you know more about that conference than I do. I thought Rich Rod just drove that school into the ground from a football aspect. But anyway, thanks for the call, guys. Just really interested in that program.
Yeah, good stuff. Thanks for the call, John.
I think it was Kevin Sumlin who took more of the blame for driving that program into the ground, because Rich Rod was winning games.
Yeah, he did.
And there was an off-the-field incident that ended Rich Rod's career at Arizona, and I believe they replaced him with Kevin Sumlin,
and
he really struggled. Struggled over a couple of years. Mm-hmm. It was reminiscent of A&M, but without the early success with Manziel. It was sort of that the end.
Yeah.
It looked like the end of A&M there, and Jed Fish inherited a program that was recovering from that, and had them back in title contention pretty soon.
Yeah, he's got a really really interesting history.
Fish?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fish does. His resume is crazy, isn't it?
I mean, it's like goes to Florida just because hoping to work for Steve Spurrier, and coached was a high school coach while he was a student at Florida.
Yeah.
Before he was a GA at Florida.
Some guys
and then years in the in professional football.
Some guys you know, they're working for the college. You know, some guys are playing college football while they're college students. Some guys are GAs for the college team while they're college students.
He's coaching high school. He's like a defensive coordinator in high school. I think he was a receivers coach and a defensive coordinator at a high school there in Gainesville while he was in school, and that helped him sort of get the GA job under Spurrier.
And a really impressive list of coaches that he's worked for too, right? I mean, you go down the line of the Harbaugh brothers and Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick, and I mean, it's some heavy hitters, you know, are guys that have hired him at different points, and Steve Spurrier as well. You know, they're at Florida. He's on the rise.
Really interesting guy and intriguing. You're right. It'll be interesting to see how things go for him there at a place where they don't have at least nationally super high expectations.
Would you sure. It's interesting that he's a Florida grad.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah. He just took a new job.
He hasn't. I mean, it's not like. You know, he's from the Northeast. He just went to Florida hoping to hook up with Steve Spurrier, hoping to get some experience with Spurrier, and he's been all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, but are you thinking, oh, if Billy Napier, hey man, it'd be tough for him to leave Washington like after a year if Napier flamed out.
But it's his alma mater.
Yeah.
The one situation there. I don't
know. Yeah, maybe if you know, the visor called.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
I hadn't thought about that. All right, let's get to our first break here of hour number two. If we have a chance, we're going to run some audio from Peyton Thorne.
Undergrad and master's
from
Florida.
Yeah.
He's got two degrees from UF.
Yeah, undergrad, and then, he got his master's, I guess, while he was working for Steve.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we will get to our first break. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
90 toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Drew. And as we were saying earlier, I mean, Peyton Thorne was among the players that was available yesterday for the media to spend some time with. And so Peyton sat down with the media, and he wasn't completely thrilled with the offensive performance on Saturday, but thought we'd let you hear some of the comments from the Auburn senior quarterback.
Hey, Matt. Hey, Matt. Okay.
How's everybody doing?
Good.
Great. How are you?
Great.
What feels different, I mean, about this fall camp versus last year?
Just about everything, honestly. You got some familiar faces around, some coaches, some players, but for the most part, there's a lot of new guys, you know, and that's a good thing. And I think the guys that Coach Freeze has brought in are his caliber guys. You know, they're high character guys. They're like-minded guys, and so you have more of the same people around, I would say, which has been great. And it's been easy to work with, and then obviously there's more talent out there as well. So it's been really fun working these past few months, and obviously right now is the team that we have, and so. This is who we're going with.
Saturday's scrimmage, you guys got some work in front of everybody. What do you think you still need to work on, and what are you guys doing best?
Yeah, you know, it's tough going out there and scrimmaging like that. You know, you want to compare it to a game, but at the same time, it's not. You know, we're thudding most of that day on the scrimmage, so you never really know how many yards you're gaining when you're thudding. You know, you fall forward for an extra three or four sometimes. So you try to keep that in mind when you're watching the film. You know, you're – me, offensively, we were frustrated walking off the field with how the day went. It was one of our not as good days of camp, I would say. But then you go back and watch the film, and it, you know, like they say, it's never as good, it's never as bad as you think. So, just some detail stuff on Saturday that was getting us. But like I said, you know, we weren't game planning for the scrimmage. We weren't game planning for our defense, really. So, It's different than an actual game. You have to remember that. You know, some plays we ran out there were the first time we ran those plays. You know, it was like a practice. You know, and so you keep that in mind. But some guys showed some good flashes, obviously, and I thought the defense did a lot of good things too.
You mentioned some guys who showed some flashes. Malcolm Simmons had a lot of attention after Saturday. What can you say about what makes him special?
Yeah, well, first thing that starts with him is his speed. You know, he can fly, and that's obviously shown in his track speed and then his jumping ability. So I think his Instagram is like Freak something, and that lives up to the name. You know, he's a freak. But you look out there, and we got a lot of guys like that. You know, we got a lot of guys that can run in that room, and then we got a lot of guys that have shake in that room too and can run, and that's a rare combo. And so as a whole, our receiver room is obviously, like you guys know, a lot different than it was last year. And so a guy like Malcolm, he had a good day Saturday, and other guys have shown up consistently throughout camp as well, having good days.
You mentioned during media days how kind of with all the new receivers that throwing sessions during the offseason, how important those were. How have you seen that, I guess, kind of pay dividends so far through fall camp, and what has it been like, you know, practicing now with all those guys?
Yeah, you know, obviously you spend a lot of time in the summer with those guys. Perry and Malcolm were two guys that showed up in the summer, so it's harder to, you know, they're a little bit behind in that aspect because they just didn't have the time that the other guys had. So trying to catch up those guys as fast as possible, but you know, guys like Cam, he's a different type of receiver. Like, you throw him different kind of balls. You know, you don't necessarily have to do things the same way as you do with a guy who might be 5'11", 6 foot, and can't jump and touch the ceiling right here, you know. So Cam, you throw him different balls and let him go play. Let him go be him, you know. And then other guys, you work with different things and ball placement, and then also timing. Like, there's some routes where you got to bend this off at a certain angle, and it's not always the same angle. So let's get on the same page with that stuff and hitting the guy, you know, in the head with the ball, and then catch and run. So it's been good.
Hey, I know you're on the other side of the ball from Coach Durkin, but when you guys go team, what do you admire about the way that he coaches that unit up, and what have been your takeaways getting to know him?
The energy that he brings is, like, you can tell with the way our defense practices every single day that there is a whole new energy. Not that our defense last year didn't have energy. You know, our defense played well last year, I thought. And we had a lot of good players over there, but I think we got a lot of good players again this year. And so that's a positive. But I might have mentioned this at media day. I think someone told me on the defense that if you don't, like, celebrate, it gets counted as a loaf. And I think that's awesome. And so everybody on the sideline is always up. You know, they don't have a day where they don't have juice. And so obviously that comes from the guy who's in control of them, and that's Coach Dirk. And then you know, the other coaches are obviously enforcing it. And then the leaders on that side of the ball are doing that. And also it's an everybody thing. You know, you have to make that decision that I'm going to show up with some juice. And a lot of times you got to fake it till you make it with certain guys. You know, you might be having a bad day, but and you might not be excited, but you get a loaf if you don't move around. So you better get your butt moving. So that's been great to see. It's been great to practice against, honestly.
What happens if you get too many loafs? Is there a punishment?
Probably. I'm not sure. I'm not, like you said, not on that side of the ball, but I'd have to ask more guys.
What about Perry Thompson? Can you explain how he's developing since he came in the summer?
Yeah, he's cleaned up some things in the summer that just in the first few 7-on-7s you saw, and it was like, okay, that's, you know, a young receiver, and that's just because he is. You know, he came right out of high school, and a lot of things that he was doing, you can get away with in high school because you're that much more athletic than everybody. And obviously, he is another freak. You know, he weighs 220 pounds as a freshman and can run. And so, I saw him getting cleaned up in like 2 or 3 weeks, honestly. And they're not really easy things to, like, break the habit of. And so, he obviously worked at it and did a really good job. And so, he is quickly materializing into a guy that will be able to help us this year.
How nice is it to have the brain of Ken Austin in the room with you?
Oh, really nice. We were going over some stuff today that was just really refreshing to be going over, and it's just next level stuff, you know, that you can sit down and break down a defense, and the detail that we go into is going to be awesome. And so for me, you know, that's huge for me, obviously. Now that I'm a, you know, veteran guy, and I've been around for quite a while now in the college game, and so being able to take it to that next level as a unit, as in me and Coach Austin be on the same page, me and Coach Freeze be on the exact same page, what we're seeing when we do game plan a team, like I was talking earlier, I feel like we're really going to be locked in on what we're looking at and locked in on what our plan is for that team.
How has Sam been as a teammate again?
Oh, he's been awesome. I freaking love that guy. He's one of the best people that I've ever met, and he works his butt off. He had a really good day today at practice. And it's crazy watching him, you know, he's in a whole different, you know, area, just like the freshmen are in a different area of their brand new. Well, you know, he's brand new to receiver. He hasn't played receiver in like 5 years. And so seeing the progress that he's made just over the last few months is crazy. You know, he's already a really, really good athlete, another guy you can put in the freak category for sure, in the way that he, some of the stuff that he can do. And, you know, he's a guy that's going to just keep taking strides because it's still new to him. And I think he's really getting the hang of it and having a lot of fun.
Can you take us through the receiver, the tight end room a little bit?
Yeah.
Valdo, Brandon, Luke, Mike, all looking like they can contribute?
Absolutely. Obviously, start with Valdo. I'm pretty sure he was all SEC last year, I think. A really talented guy, you know, obviously put together. He can run as well for a tight end, and he's got probably the strongest hands I've ever seen, honestly. So you should give him a chance, and there's a good chance that he's going to come down with it. So he's been great, and he's progressing still and getting better, and he's had stuff that he wants to work on. I think he's doing a good job with that. And then you go to, you know, Big Frage. He's a talented guy, too. He's a Division I basketball player, you know, back in the day. And so he's a guy who can do a lot of things, and he's underrated as a pass catcher, honestly. He's really good getting open, and then also when the ball's thrown to him, he comes down with that thing. And he's proven that over practice and games. And then Luke is obviously a captain from last year who brings different things to the table, really good in the run game. He can catch balls if he needs to, and is a leader of that room. And then, like you said, to Micah, Micah's getting older as he goes, and I know he's working on things as well and is showing up on the field.
Having Rivaldo back, especially when he was your guy's leading receiver last year, how much does that help you when, you know, you've got so many pieces coming in, having, you know, you're tied into, you know, you've already, you're more familiar with?
Yeah, it's kind of like one of those things. You look last year, it's almost like, what can you learn from last year and what can you take from the positive last year? And I guess it's, I never threw to the tight end as much as I did last year. So it's building my part or a part of my game that I didn't do before, I guess. And so we'll carry that over into this year. And you have confidence throwing to a guy like that. And then also now, you know, they can't double team him anymore. I think he said that the other day. There were times we get in the red zone, they cloud coverage to him because they knew we were throwing stop route or go route to him. And if they do that this year, now they're going to be light elsewhere, whether that's in the box or to the field. And so don't think they're going to be able to do that this year, which is good. And it'll open up more of our passing game, having more talent out there.
You mentioned that's the most, you said it's the most you've thrown to your tight end before. How much does, you know, having somebody like that open up the offense, and how much easier, I guess, does it make your job?
You know, it's just another good skill player. Obviously, he's a mid-skill, we call it, but, you know, having a tight end that can work on linebackers is huge. As the game changes, you got more and more athletes playing linebacker, more guys that can run really well at linebacker, so it's not as much of an advantage as I guess it used to be back in the day, but it still is. You know, if you have a good tight end, he should beat a linebacker, you know, 7-8 times out of 10. And I think Valdo can do that for sure. And so it allows you to have getting spread formations and let your tight end go to work sometimes. So it definitely helps.
Peyton, one of the things we heard from Coach Austin was your complete command of the offense, and talked a little bit about checking at the line and things like that. How much do you expect to do of that this year compared to last year, being able to adjust on the fly?
Quite a bit more, honestly. You know, last year was obviously, like I said before, a unique situation. It was weird, and there was a lot of things that were out of my control, and that was one of them. But now, with us all being on the same page about what we're doing, and we're still materializing some of that stuff, and we're still working through the specifics of certain things, but from a week-to-week basis, I think that, like Coach said, I feel really good with where we're at right now, and I feel like I have a really good understanding of what Coach Freeze is trying to do, Coach Nix is trying to do, and what Coach Austin sees. And so if we're on the same page and we're seeing things the same, Coach is going to have confidence in me to be able to change things up if I need to, and because that's what he would do, you know, if he was there. So it's been great. It's been really fun, and it's a part of my game that I didn't get to use last year, like you said, very much at all. And I think that we're going to be able to have that as a weapon this year.
Sometimes quarterbacks are only as good as their supporting cast. We don't ever want to say that as a guy when things aren't going great. But do you feel better about everything you got around you, the playmakers, the blockers, everything?
Yeah.
Maybe just because you've been together for a year.
Yeah, no question about that. I feel like you look at just about any quarterback in this game. People say it's the ultimate team game, and it really is, you know. It's tough. You've seen great quarterbacks in the NFL. You know, if stuff starts to break down around them, they're still good, but they're not the same as they are when they have all their pieces, you know. And so it's definitely a tough situation sometimes. You just have to deal with what you got at times. But like you said, I feel really good with where we're at right now. And like I said before, we still have young guys. You know, we still have four freshmen who are potentially going to play for us. You know, that's not exactly, one, common. And two, you know, at the end of the day, they're still young. You know, you can't go out there and expect them to be these seasoned veteran receivers who know everything. There's still going to be some times where you're like, man, what the heck? Like, but yeah, just remind yourself, hey, this kid was playing high school ball last year. So, you know, Cam has had one or two times like that, not many, honestly, but having him in the spring has really helped develop him. But yeah, at the end of the day, when you have a guys around you that can make plays and sometimes turn a 5-yard gain into 20, that helps a lot.
Ben, talking to your coaches today and maybe after the scrimmage, what are the focuses right now in terms of moving forward in fall camp?
Yeah, like I said before, just getting these details together. I feel like we're really on a good track. You know, it's not like we're out here scrambling like, oh, my gosh, what the heck? You know, it's this and this and this. It's just little things. You know, coach might see something that we think we can tweak to make it a little bit better than it already is. And we'll go ahead and do that and, you know, get on the same page, like I said, communicate that to the receivers, to the tight ends and up front and make sure everybody is seeing it the same and then move forward and then get reps at it, you know. So. Little things like operation things, getting the ball in, ball handling in terms of ball carriers and how that's going to look, the tempo, and different things we're doing with that. So just little things. And then Coach Freeze obviously has quite the playbook. So getting his little wrinkles all in there and all ironed out is always fun.
Peyton Thorne spending some time with the media yesterday. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break, and Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us on the other side. So stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
On ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we're going to head to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Welcome in our good friend from Crane & Company, and that's Jake Crane. Jake, how you doing today, man?
Man, I'm doing great, guys. We are, as I give a weekly update when I come on here, we are literally mere weeks away from toe, meat, and leather. And, man, I'm so excited for it. I'm ready for it to get here.
Yeah, no kidding. It was great. We had the opportunity to get out and watch practice on Saturday. It wasn't, you know, a full scrimmage, a lot of thud. There was some tackling to the ground. But, I mean, again, just great opportunity to be able to get out there and see that and feel it. It's hey, let's face it, it's going to feel like this when the season starts. It's going to be ridiculously hot. But, you know, thus far for Auburn, one thing, cross your fingers, there haven't been any serious injuries. You look around, Hugh Freeze was talking about this last week before the practice, and, you know, it's been a source of a lot of discussion. How physical do you go? Because you need to be physical, but boy, you look around and you see some top players around the league and around the country that are going down.
Yeah, I'm almost afraid to talk about it. You know, Auburn's caught the brakes up until this point, getting ready to get into the season, which is huge. You know, it's a tough line to walk because, you know, you have to have the physical elements of it, but the first thing you have to have is depth to be able to have legitimate physical practices and be able to rebound from guys getting hurt, guys getting banged up outside of, you know, what goes on Saturdays or whatever day of the week you play. You know, you want to make sure you get enough hitting to be able to get a true evaluation, to get guys ready to play, to get guys in that mode. But you also want to be healthy once the season gets here. So whatever Auburn's doing up to this point, it has worked. I know the coaches are personally happy about the physicality level. But, yeah, I mean, each team is different. Right, because you have different experience on each team. But it seems like Auburn has learned how to practice, which is just as important of learning what to do in practice.
Jake, it's a you know, we were talking about some of the Auburn Some of the changes, some of the some of the holdovers. You know, what's the same from last year's roster? What strike you as, I get with a couple weeks to go, strengths and weaknesses of this Auburn team, things that you're really interested in evaluating those first couple of weeks on the field.
Well, you know, obviously you look at quarterback with Peyton Thorne, you're hoping you're going to, get better than what you got last year. I would expect to get better than what you got last year because you have better weapons around you, right? So obviously Auburn at the skill position and the offensive line, I think, on the whole, is going to be better. So I think there's upgrades all around the offense. You've added depth to that defensive line. I think a few pass rushers are going to emerge. You've got some veteran linebackers. You'd probably say the secondary, just because it's not as deep as other places. There's some unproven guys there, and you lost a lot last year, would be the quote-unquote weakness. But I'll tell you this, I'd much rather be stronger in the front seven and rushing the passer and on the defensive line and weaker in the back end than vice versa, because you can hide an average secondary or just a good secondary with a really good pass rush and a good front seven. You can't cover guys for 6-7 seconds in the back end.
You know, Jake, a couple of things that really jump out to me that we saw on Saturday is the depth that Auburn has there up front, the transfer additions, the ones that have come since spring. Isaiah Rakes, Philip Bleedy, Kieron Crawford, and then you combine that with DJ Durkin's style of defense. I think this is going to be a fun defense for Auburn fans to watch.
No, without a doubt. I mean, again, going back to the depth on the defensive line and especially at the pass rushing positions, the guys you count on to be able to pin their ears back and go get it, having that depth allows guys to empty the tank more and to empty it earlier. Auburn wasn't able to do that last year. It was just like you were just trying to hold on and make it through the end of the game, as opposed to now being able to go empty the tank and still be as strong or stronger at the end of the game. But as far as DJ Durkin, guys, DJ Durkin's a heck of a coach, but when you combine DJ Durkin and Charles Kelly, that is a monster from a mental standpoint when you look at the defensive side of the ball. There's nothing these guys haven't seen on offense or on defense that they've gotten from somebody else or learned through experience. So I'm very, very interested and intrigued to see the way that Auburn goes about when they pressure and how they pressure. You know, you want to mix it up. You can never always do the same thing. But when you have more depth, and Bill, I think you'll agree with me here. I wasn't at the scrimmage, but when I talked to people that were there, the first thing that pretty much all of them said was Auburn just looks physically better. We just look bigger. We look the way that we're supposed to look from the starters all the way to two, almost three deep, which that to me is the biggest thing at the end of the day, because you can have the greatest coaches of all time, the greatest play callers, the greatest schemers. If you don't have the dudes on the field, none of it matters. So I just feel like Auburn, we look like we're supposed to look.
Yeah, we said that early on Monday, and we've seen them practice. But when you watch them out there on the field, again, I mean, it's like you hear the old phrase, man, they look good getting off the bus. They absolutely do. This looks like an SEC team. It looks like an SEC team that can play with any other SEC team. They didn't look like that last year. They had a few guys. They are, I mean, throughout, as you said, throughout first, second, third unit, they still look like SEC players. A lot of them are freshmen, though. I mean, but this is a special freshman class. I mean, we've talked so much about Cam Coleman, Malcolm Simmons, Perry Thompson, just electric to watch. But we looked out there and Malik Blockton is running with the first. He was out there on the first series on the defensive line. Amaris Williams, Jamonta Waller, they really love a couple of the DBs, and Jalen Crawford and Amon Lane. I mean, just goes on and on. And this class, I mean, it was one that Hugh Freeze and his staff really had to scrap and, pull this one together. But I mean, it's I think going to be a very special class, and they're definitely headed for at least as good a class, and looks perhaps better for next year. But to your original point, no doubt they look the part. Now they've got to get out and show that they can play the part.
Well, Bill, these guys in these last two recruiting classes, right? They were told you're the ones that are going to flip the script. the change starts with you guys, and they bought into that. And I think that puts something even deeper inside of a player, inside of a person, when you're going to be the one that's going to flip the switch back to Auburn being where Auburn deserves to be. So now all these guys that are young right now that look good, they're going to be older two classes from now. That's why I continue to call this year the biggest bridge year we've had at Auburn in a long time. I don't think we're going to win 10 games, but if Auburn goes out there and wins eight, at least eight, Katie better bar the door because Hugh and them are coming, and they're not going to stop until they get what they want.
Jake, it looks like Auburn's going to lean on some of their freshman receivers from this outstanding class to produce early this season. What are the most important things for a freshman receiver trying to make the jump and contribute in his first year of college football?
Well, you know, it's all the little things outside of just going and catching the ball. I mean, these guys were brought to Auburn, and they're going to have to play early just because of the circumstance they're in. But these guys were brought to Auburn because they could catch the ball. They could go get it. They were fast. But to be a complete wide receiver or to be an effective wide receiver at the college level, you've got to understand the nuance of running routes. You've got to understand that coverages are going to move more, not only pre-snap, but mid-snap. You have to understand the importance that your block could turn a 20-yard run into an 80-yard run. You've got to understand the importance of knowing you need to run your route hard and do the little things when it's a run play to be able to sell it so it works on play action. It's all of those little things outside of the obvious. You know, you've got to be physically ready. You've got to be able to be in unbelievable shape and condition to be able to go play in any environment, any amount of snaps. But it's all the stuff outside of just catching the ball that turns you into a legitimate college wide receiver. And I think that's another reason why these guys were brought in. I think there's a physical aspect, obviously, to Perry Thompson and Cam Coleman, who are huge. But even the guys that aren't as big as they are, you know, Malcolm and these other guys that are going to learn from the older guys. That's why I kept saying that Cam Coleman, I'm ecstatic about. Perry Thompson, I'm ecstatic about. But I am just as excited, maybe even more excited, about bringing in Keandre Lambert-Smith, about bringing in Robert Lewis, having some of these older veteran wide receivers help the young guys who are more talented than they are grow into being a legitimate college receiver.
That's a great point. I mean, and we didn't even get to see Keandre Lambert-Smith on Saturday, but we've heard so much about him and Robert and Sam Jackson. Sam Jackson's an older guy. He is still learning some of the nuances of a receiver, but he's talked about, you know, he knows what to expect from a quarterback's point of view, so that's a big help as well. And I think you can look at the same thing over on the defensive side when you brought in the senior transfers to go with those young guys, the Blocktons, the Amaris Williams, the Jamonta Wallers, and guys like that. When you're bringing in seniors who have played at the Power Five level, and am I wrong, Jake? I mean, it's not unusual, or it perhaps is sometimes easier for guys to be able to get playing time at a wide receiver and as a defensive lineman because you're relying as so much on your natural ability, and obviously you have to learn the nuances.
Oh, no, without a doubt. And, I mean, I just like the blend of this roster, Bill, to kind of, you know, hammer your point home. You have a bunch of young, talented guys with some older talented guys who it seems have taken on that leadership role. And one of the most enticing things about coming to Auburn was not only being able to play in Jordan-Hare and the SEC and at a place like Auburn, but being able to play and be a leader in that room to bring these younger guys along. So as far as playing time and what position, really outside of quarterback and offensive line and a lot in the secondary, people rotate a decent amount, right? So
right.
If you play a skill position outside of quarterback, especially if you're in a system that may throw it more, that may run it more, that's going to determine your playing time. I tell you one thing, Bill, that I used to like to do was I would play less guys in the back end in the secondary because, you know, I wouldn't just have a field corner and a boundary corner. I would teach the corners to play both because that eliminates some of the running against hurry-up offenses when the ball changes hashes or sides of the field. Well, now this corner's got to run 40 yards to go to this side. The other corner's got to run 40 yards to go to the other side. So there's little things and ways to kind of eliminate rotating. But depending on what you have, I mean, in a perfect world, you know, you'd love to be so deep you can rotate multiple guys in there to keep them fresh. But every position group is different.
Talking with Jake Crane from Crane and Company. Jake, any thoughts on the preseason AP poll, which we got earlier today? Georgia, a healthy favorite there, getting 45 of the 61 first-place votes. Ohio State and Oregon also represented in the top three, and Texas and Bama rounding out the top five.
Yeah, I think this year, and you know, I don't know if you guys agree with me or not, I think there's more teams that can win a national championship this year than we've had in a while, including last year. I don't see that one team at the top of the hill that everybody's going to be chasing. I mean, Georgia, to me, overall is the best team, but when you look at that schedule, I mean, it's absolutely brutal what they've got to go through as well. They're built for it, but Ohio State and Oregon, I would say those three rosters with Georgia are probably ahead of everybody else's. But I think teams like Utah are sneaky. You look around the rest of the country, I think there's five teams that could win the SEC. But what I'm not understanding, and I guess it's just how it is every offseason, I might as well get used to it, is this just infatuation with Notre Dame. Like, so many people have penciled Notre Dame into the playoff. They're a top 10 team. I think they're about to walk into Kyle Field and get their pants pulled down in front of God and everybody. They just lost their left tackle, who was replacing Joe Alt, who is their stud freshman, Charles Jaguza. He's gone. They've got another injury on the offensive line. And while they're going to be better at the skill position, I don't think they're going to be who they were up front last year. You got to play Texas A&M. You got to play USC. You got to play Florida State. You go through their schedule. I'm not penciling in Notre Dame to finish in the top 10.
I mean, it was a good second year, and I feel like, you know, in the case of both Marcus Freeman and Brent Venables, folks are using that second year and thinking they can build on it, you know, from 10 wins in year two. But you're right. I think in the case of both both those guys, they've got some really tough games away from home, and they have some questions on their roster as far as whether or not they can sustain. Yeah. Notre Dame was 9-3 regular season, won their bowl game last year. Oklahoma 10-2 and beat Texas. You know, can you build on that in year three, or do you take a step back? Because when a coach takes a step back in year three, you start to worry.
It's not good. That's not a good step. No, no.
Well, yeah, you.
A lot of times
you
it's into a hole
and lost a lot.
Jake,
hey, you know, hear me?
Yeah, we got you. I was just checking up. I didn't realize we're a little behind. Great stuff as always, Jake. Let everybody know what you got coming up on Crane and Company.
Yeah, man, we had Barrett Staley on today. We're talking everything college football. I actually put out some NFL futures as well today. So if you're into the sports gambling side of it, are you up just talking ball, Auburn included, obviously. Our show's called Crane and Company, C-R-A-I-N and Company. Comes on live each weekday, 2 to 3:30 p.m. Central. We take live calls, have a live chat. We're almost to 150,000 subscribers, so we're very thankful for that. Come check us out. We're an old-school sports show. We have a lot of fun.
Great stuff, Jake. Thanks a lot, man. Have a great week.
Appreciate it, Jake.
All right, y'all be good.
Jake Crane of Crane & Company joining us as he does on Tuesdays. We'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Inspired by the bold bison, Southern Union.